Welcome to the New Mind Creator Podcast with your host, Maurice, the New Mind Creator. Today, I'll be interviewing Kirby Ingles. Please make sure to hit the subscribe button so that you'll receive alerts when new episodes are available on Sundays at 9 p.m. Eastern Time.
So, Kirby, you had to take on a lot more responsibility over the last several months. How has it been for you, you know, being able to take care of everything while your wife has been down for a little while?
I'll be honest with you, it hasn't been easy. It has been really tough, and I have had to make some really tough calls and decisions when it comes to not only what I do as far as my business goes, but also, you know, my family and what's important to us and what we do. And it's really become of a choice, right? And I've had to decide what priorities and principles are we going to stick with and what are we going to let slide off. So I call it the Velcro Teflon effect. It's an idea that I learned a long time ago, but I noticed it applied to this situation. And what I've done is, you know, the things that are important should stick and like Velcro. And then the things that aren't important should just slide off. And those should be easy no's for us, you know, when new things and new opportunities present themselves during this time frame where it's really challenging because I'm a caregiver for my wife and I have five children and she has a broken leg. And so I have had to pick up additional duties and responsibilities around the home. I'm also now the domestic home engineer. And so I have to manage the household on top of, you know, running this business and doing this coaching stuff. And so what we've done is we've just, you know, really got hyper-focused on what our priorities and principles are and what our values are and decide that, hey, there's some things that we're doing that we just don't need to be doing anymore. We need to let those things slide away. And in that turn, we are just now amplifying what's most important at this point. And you could say, you know, 10 times in that, 100 times in that, whatever the idea is behind that. But we're just trying to amplify those things now. So,
yeah. So what has your wife given you the stamp of approval on you taking care of things?
Actually, she has been very gracious with her kindness towards me. I get a lot less criticism before of what I am and am not doing. And she sees my, you know, it's interesting because there's a silver lining to all this. You know, she fell off a ladder about 12 feet in the air, broke her foot in four places and had to have three screws and three plates put in. And through that process, we've actually gotten closer together because of that. And not as because, you know, she was in this, you know, dangerous position and she had to have surgery, you know, and there's a possibility that, the doctors told us 20 years ago, she would have walked with a limp for the rest of her life, or they would have had to amputate her foot. But because of technology and the research and the understanding that they have today, you know, 20 years ago, it would have been a different story. So she's very fortunate to have the doctors that she has. But through that process, you know, we've learned to grow together because now she's had to rely on me more and I've had to rely on her for other things that I once used to do that now she does. And we've had to let some things go. And that's allowed us to kind of get closer together as well in our relationship. And she's begun to see, as I began this conversation with this question, my level of commitment to her now. And so that has completely changed. So when she, I call it the domestic household engineer because she manages the household. She's not a housewife or a mom. She's a domestic household engineer. It's a job in itself. And I give her that honor and credit. But it really has just been transformative for us because of she's been the one committed at home. She's been the one committed to the children. And I fall into play wherever she tells me. She's kind of like the quarterback at the house. You know, while I'm the quarterback at work, she's the quarterback at the house and she calls the plays and she tells me where to go and I be there and I support her in that way. Now the roles have reversed and now I have to fulfill most of those roles. And so she really does appreciate the the what I have done. So,
wow. So I know that I guess it could. It's great to hear that it's gone in the positive for you, because I know during the pandemic, like when things have happened, it kind of exacerbated some households and made it go in a negative direction because of the pressure that's from the pandemic and also the pressures that are within. But it's really good to hear that you all decided to go in the positive direction.
Yeah, it's been a really interesting year. I'm kind of glad 2020 is over. It's just, it's time to move on, right? And and when you cross that threshold from 2020 to 2021, it's almost like you can begin again. It's a whole new mindset. I know a lot of people tend to focus on what went wrong during the year. And there's a lot that went wrong. Let's not dismiss that, because a lot did go wrong. And there's a lot of unfortunate things. There's a lot of loss in people's lives, from individuals to jobs to all kinds of things, lifestyles. And that's one of the things that's been really challenging in my coaching practice, is a lot of my members have lost something. And they're all trying to figure out how to fill that loss or fill that gap, or, you know, how to replace that with something else, because it's disrupted their lives. And it's really been, you know, a very challenging, but we've been very creative about that process. And some people struggled more than others. Mm-hmm. And, you know, despite, you know, what happened, you know, there was a period of time in the current year or the past year, 2020, that I even had, you know, a few months where I began to struggle because you just didn't leave the house. You know, you just didn't get out. You know, the kids were homeschooling because they weren't allowed to go back into the school, and it became very tough, you know, and there's a lot of chaos, you know, and there was a lot of theories and, you know, controversies and things going on. And you just to try to keep yourself level headed and focused and not get caught up in all the noise and just focus on the right things. That was very difficult for a little while. And then again, you know, we had that move in July, which for us, we moved from Southern Missouri to Kansas City, back to where my wife's family lives. And that was the first shift for us out of that what I call the pit, because that's really what it is a pit. And so we kind of started climbing out of the pit at that moment. And then when my wife broke her leg, that was another shift. And we began, you know, it kind of helped propel us forward. And it was a good propel for 2021, because now we've hit the ground running.
Yeah, so I know it kind of leads us into, our topic, fear. But how, I know that people internalize things that happen in different ways. So did you have any fear during this process that, you know, that you all were going through?
You know, I'm going to say probably the moment where I had the most fear, that it really, I really had to get in touch with my emotions, was when my wife went into surgery. Anytime you have any type of surgery, whether it's life-threatening or not, which my wife's really wasn't, I mean, there's like a 1% risk or chance, your family member's still coming under a knife, under the care of doctors and folks, and you have to trust them. You have to trust them. You have to give that up, because you don't have a choice at this moment. You know, you have to entrust her care to them. And that was scary for me, probably more scary than anything else. When the COVID first hit, my wife was the one who was worried. It was about wipe this down, wipe that down. We got to do this. Why? When I walked in the house, I had to wipe my keys down with Lysol wipes and my phone and, you know, things of that nature if I went to the store. And she was very, very adamant about it, because there was a lot of things we just didn't know in the very beginning. And so I, in that position for me as a leader of my family and a leader for other folks, when I see chaos happening, I just have a little bit more self-awareness at that moment. And I can see, okay, everybody else is starting to freak out or get worried, or, you know, their fear is starting to, you know, take over, and I need to remain calm in this moment. And so I'm fortunate that I've had that, what they call a dispersonality profile system, the high D. I'm a high D, low IC. And those are the people that you tend to go to in times of chaos or conflict, because they kind of tell everybody, okay, this is what we got to do. You know, and they're like, that's why I use the quarterback analogy a lot, because that's what it is. You're the quarterback. And they have, you know, another side of them during when there's no chaos. And so there's another certain personality, but they're usually generally the go-to get people, and they're about 10% of the population. And so I, you know, for me, it's always a lot easier for me to recognize what's going on around me and have that mindfulness and say, okay, look, people need me to stay calm right now. And that's what I need to do. And I kind of shut everything else off and just focus on, okay, how do I mitigate risk? How do I take care of the situation? And a lot of it, to be honest with you, is controlling what I do, because I can't control what's around me. And that's how you overcome fear for the most part. And that's kind of where this is going, is you really have to just stay focused on what you can control. And I, you know, there's a lot of different methods, a lot of different ways to kind of take that worrisomeness away. For me, I'm a Christian man. So I try to give that to God, and, you know, I pray and I do my, you know, some of my meditation exercises that I do in the morning. I work out and I just give that, I go to the right rituals and routines, which I can control, and weaponize myself to put myself in the best position possible through my routines and rituals, that where I'm focused for the day and I stay very relevant and focused throughout the day. And that helps me a lot. And so I can control me, and that's about it. And I can focus on me, and that's about it. Now I can help mitigate situations and help other people, but I have to be in the right mindset and mind frame first before I can help somebody else. Kind of goes back to that airline thing, right? Where they tell you to put your mask on first before you help somebody else. It's always true. And I know that's a cliche story or analogy that people use, but it is 100% the focus is you have to focus on yourself first before you can help other people.
Yeah. So what is the what is the high D? What does that stand for?
So the high D is a particular personality on the dispersonality profile system. And so if you were to take a look at it, each letter actually represents something else. And I'm very in tune with the D, because that's where I've done most of my studies and rituals on, and or not the rituals, but learning. And the high D really just means direct. I'm a very direct person. I'm very driven. I can be very demanding. And sometimes I'm very dominant. And so I have to be very self-aware of that too, because if it's not a crisis or a moment where they need like that very direct and driven and decisive leadership, then it can be seen as intimidating in a calmer setting. And so that's where the personality profile system really comes into play, is understanding your profile and how it is unattractive in certain situations, but very attractive in others, and you begin to leverage your personality in different situations and have that self-awareness to kind of say, hey, I need to kind of pull back in this situation and allow other people to contribute and provide their ideas. And it works really well in meetings and organizations. So I use it a lot when I am coaching in corporate or Fortune 500 companies.
Okay. And you said a low C?
Yeah, I'm a high D. Low IC. So when you take the survey, it actually gives you, I focus more on the high D, because that's what really truly comes out. But there's a few different other ones, and that's the low I, well, D or it's D I S C.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And each one has its own personality type. I mean, I could probably go over those if you want me to.
Yeah, that could be helpful to give some insight.
Yeah. So a high D or a D person, we'll just talk about the lead, but there's four temperaments, and the D is basically a very active and task-oriented person. They're direct, they're driven, they're demanding, they're dominating, determined, they're decisive, and they just do stuff. I call them the D words. And then And then the I person, somebody that leads with an I, is they're very active, but they're also, just like the D, they're active, but they're people-oriented. So they tend to be more inspiring, influencing, inducing, impressing. They're interactive, and they're interested in people. And then the two passive or the reserved personality temperaments is the C. And it's more like active and passive, but then there's task-oriented and people-oriented. So it ends up working out that way. But the C is cautious, competent, calculating, compliant, careful, and contemplative. And I resonate with the C also. That's why I'm a high DIC. As you know, the D was active and task-oriented, but the I was active and people-oriented. So I had that common trait with the I, or the, yeah, the I is being active. And then the C was task-oriented, and the D is task-oriented. So that's why it's a high D, low IC, because they're rarely passive. And then the S, the last one, of course, I'll talk about that one. And that's very passive and people-oriented. And they're steady. They're stable. They tend to be shy. They tend to look for security. They tend to be servants. And that's in a servant mentality. They serve others. You know, they would rather not be in that leadership role. But they would rather just be told, hey, this is what you need to do, and they'll go do it. They're not going to be the one that volunteers to take the role in the group setting. Because of their submissiveness, they tend to be specialists. So, you know, they tend to focus on one particular area, and they're, you know, subject matter experts, or they master their particular craft in that particular area, and they're really niched. And so, like I said, they're stable, but they're shy, and they tend to, you know, be a little bit more submissive. So, and it's, you know, and understanding your personality profile system and how it might particularly clash with another one. And so for a high D, the way I am, and a C, I have to be very aware, or that person could consider my leadership style very toxic. So
So it's good to know where you stand, your personality. I guess the more information you know about yourself, the better equipped you're going to be in awareness to having that awareness, like you're saying, when to dial it down if you need to, or be more of yourself if that's a dominant trait. So that's
pretty, yeah, cool. You know, you're 100% right. It's really all you're really trying to do is solve the people puzzle, and it's really trying to understanding these different personality patterns in human behavior science at the core of it. So it really does make better organizations and better teams and better people. You know, when you know how, you know, your particular patterns and your particular personalities, you know, are complement a situation or really have an adverse effect.
Yeah. So control. So you said controlling, overcoming fear, you need to, one attribute is to control what you can control.
Mm-hmm.
So control the things that you can control. And what does that accomplish?
Well, when you're able to focus on the things that you can control, you allow those other things to not be your focus. Things are going to happen beyond your control. And if you spend all your time focused on those things, you're not going to focus on what you can do. So, for example, when the pandemic hit, I began to focus on the things that I could control. A lot of the members of my program, you know, began to get worried about the things that they couldn't control, which was, is my company going to lay me off? Well, there's a big possibility about that, right? They're, you know, are they going to send me home and I'm never going to come back? You're right. There is a huge possibility, but can you control that? No. But what can you control? You can show up and you can do the best job that you can do, and then you can contribute and you can check on your people and you can be that leader in the moment, to where when it does come down to a choice, you might be the top candidate for them to keep instead of let go. And so what can you control? You can control yourself and how you show up in the situation. And that's how we did it at the beginning of the pandemic. And we focused on staying calm, composed, stoic, having self-awareness, We worked on a lot of those skill sets and traits, and having a level of executive presence. So that way that, you know, when it boils down to it, we didn't look like, you know, we were out of control. Because nobody, if you're out of control and you start acting out of control, nobody's going to look to you as a leader, right? They're going to start being like, oh, no, I don't know if I can trust this person, you know, with, you know, my career, or my life, and everything else that's going on in the situation. So they're probably not going to seek out your leadership. It's really important to kind of stay composed in those moments.
Okay. So what's something else people can do to help overcome their fear? I know, you know, control what they can control. Mm-hmm. And what is something else?
Yeah. So the other thing is that you have to identify what the fear is, first of all, and why. And so I like to try to get down to the root cause of the fear. And for some folks that I've worked with, we'll say that they fear, we'll take a very simple example of maybe having children, you know, and something that, you know, maybe we all have to face at some point in time. And, you know, when it boils down to why do you have that fear, it may be their upbringing, right? And they don't really know that. They're just like, well, you know, I don't know if I would be a good parent, you know. I don't really know what I'm doing. And, you know, they're making a lot of excuses. But when it really boils down to it, you know, when you start to peel the layers back, they may have had a childhood where they didn't have a very good upbringing. And so they don't feel prepared. But they might have the skills to be a great parent. But what's happening is they're allowing self-limiting thoughts to enter into their mind, you know, based off experiences and how they've seen the world through their lens. And they just haven't been able to step back and see that they are equipped, or they might have that ability. They may be a good caregiver or caretaker. They just don't see it for themselves right now, because they're allowing self-limiting thoughts to overcome them. And so you just, and that's another way to overcome fear as well, is to begin to reshape those self-limiting thoughts and reverse those. And say, for example, if you have a fear of public speaking, and I've had to deal with this myself, so I have a personal experience with it, and there's a story I could tell about it, but if you have a fear of getting up on stage, right, and you've never spoken in front of people, and there's 200 people out there, you know that these people want a good show. But because you doubt your abilities, you're allowing that to overcome you. But they really want you to succeed. But you're allowing the negative thoughts that's there in your head to prevent you from succeeding. But they do. And you have to put yourself in that mindset that they want to hear me. They want me to show up and do my very, very best. And so you begin by using facts and optimism to kind of begin to destroy the self-limiting thoughts in your mind. And what I mean by that is, if I'm a leadership coach and I step on stage and I'm fearful that they're not going to believe me, or I'm not credible. And I'm like, yeah, you know, I don't think I'm not credible enough. I haven't done enough of this. I haven't done enough of that. I can say that might be so, but I have been a part of this profession for the last 8 years. And I've been in leadership positions for over 25 years. So I do have what it takes, and I'm good enough. And so you have to kind of begin to reverse that with facts. So, yeah, I might not have spoken on stage about leadership before, but I have been in these positions for 25 years, and I do have the knowledge, and I do have the experience. And so you have to look for the facts. The other thing is hope and optimism. And that's really where, you know, like, I'm getting ready to get on stage, and I'm having these self-limiting thoughts, and I'm like, you know what, I might not have ever done this before. However, I know that I can prepare myself to do this. And then when I show up, I'm going to do the very best job that I can. And I'm going to learn from this experience, and I'm going to improve, and I'm going to grow. And so you begin to use it as an opportunity for personal growth, and you perceive it in that manner with hope and optimism. And then you can kind of flip it and say, instead of looking negative at the situation, I'm looking at it positively. And that's the piece of positive.
Yeah. So the root, you find out whatever root causes is. So you have to really take an introspective look and be honest with yourself. Okay, mm-hmm. Why am I fearful? The root cause. And then you have to speak facts to yourself, because like our thoughts mm-hmm. are just silent words. So it's taking us, whatever thoughts, dominant thoughts we have, is literally taking mm-hmm. us in that direction. So like you were saying, if you have fearful thoughts, you're going to pretty much stay in there. But if you begin to change it by your thoughts, okay, what are the facts? Then you say, okay, where's the hope mm-hmm. and optimism? Because you most likely you're qualified to do so, but our minds takes us in the negative when we are overcome by fear. So in order to go beyond that, we have to change our
minds. Yes, and a lot of that is an idea that we refer to as pummeling negative thoughts. And it's like a boxing match. A negative thought enters your mind, and you strike back. You jab it, you can hit a hook, an uppercut, or however you want to, play that out. But, you just begin this boxing match, and you begin to pummel these negative thoughts as they enter your head. You fight back with them with facts, optimism, and hope. And that's really the concept. Now, there's another thing where, we begin to spiral out of control with our negative thoughts, and we're fearful of a particular situation or outcome. Say you're waiting on a phone call, right, about a job offer, and you were one of 10 candidates, and they told you that they would call you at 3 o'clock. And you have a little anxiety leading up to that moment. You're sitting there waiting, and 3 o'clock hits and it passes. And you begin to think to yourself, I didn't get the job. They didn't call. I must have messed up. And you start going back and thinking of all the things that you did wrong. And that's generally what people do. And you start to spiral out of control. And there's techniques about putting things into perspective. And it's and how you do that, right? And how you put things into perspective is you begin to feel yourself spiral out of control, and you begin this. There's a few different patterns. There's a spiral effect that kind of looks like a tornado, where you just begin to spiral out of control downwards. And then there's a shotgun pattern, and there's a loop pattern. And so people have one of the different patterns that they have that when they begin to have negative thoughts and they begin to spiral out of control. And what you do is you focus on, and I'll take you through three different steps here. The first step is to think of the worst thing that could possibly happen when you feel like you're in this negative situation, or you begin to become fearful, or you're fearful of this particular situation. And it's, you think of the worst possible scenario, like the thing that would be just the worst. And you have to allow yourself to go to the extreme. And then the second step, and you can do this on a piece of paper with three different columns. So on the first left-hand side of the column, you would write down the worst things that could possibly happen. And then on the right side of the paper, in that right-hand column, you would write down the things that, the most outrageous positive things that can happen. Maybe they're running late and they haven't called me because they're sending a limo over to me to fly me out on Delta to Disney World. And I had the whole park by myself. You begin to chuckle, right? I heard you chuckle. And so you kind of laughed about that, right? And so now yes. What you've done is you've shifted yourself out of that perspective, that negative mindset. Because you've forced yourself to think of something that's just completely outrageous. And maybe they're going to fly me around the world and I get to visit a country a day for the next year. You could just, you could come up with some crazy stuff, right, in your mind. The brand new car there is waiting for me outside with a bow on it. It's a Tesla. Yeah, you just begin to write these things down, right? You can get outrageous and crazy. And then after you kind of felt yourself shift out of that perspective and you kind of find yourself chuckle, okay, then you can go back to the middle column And what's the most likely scenario? What's more realistic in this in this perspective? Because the reason why we do the most outrageous optimistic thing is because we want to shift ourselves out of that negative perspective. And then in the middle, what we have is the realization of the situation. Maybe the power went out in the building and they don't have the telephone. Maybe they lost cell service. Maybe their phone died. Maybe, you know, their kid was sick that day and they had to cancel everything on their schedule. There's a lot of possibilities that could have happened that are outside of our control. And to tell you the story, it's an actual true story. The scenario of the guy sitting there waiting for a phone call at 3 o'clock is a very true scenario. Guess what? At 3:30, they called him and he got the job. So that, but he, you had to sit there and kind of take yourself out of this negative scenario. Now we do this with fear. You know, people do this with roller coasters. People do this with all kinds of things, with public speaking. We prevent ourselves from being our best selves and having these wonderful experiences in our lives because we're afraid of what the outcome might be. But the outcome hasn't happened yet. We don't know until we actually try. And then nobody's going to be perfect in the very beginning. You know, you're going to make mistakes. We're going to trip and fall. We're going to have to practice at it before we're really, really good at it. Success doesn't happen overnight. So, I mean, if you think about it, Bezos, right, the guy that owns Amazon, started a bookstore, an online bookstore, and everybody told him it was not going to work. And now look at the guy. He's the second richest man in the world, and he didn't do that overnight. It took him a couple decades to do that.
Yeah. So when somebody begins to try to implement these things that you're talking about to overcome their fear, even if they mess up, they need to still utilize this positive mindset to get back in the game, so to speak, because just because you may have messed up or you didn't do things exactly and you were overcome, it's not that you won't be successful. It's just you getting back
in
the game.
You're exactly right. You have to focus right on getting better. And you know that right out the gate, you're not going to be the best. We all have to start from somewhere. And we're all beginners, every single one of us. And that's, we focus way too much on what other people might think. And that's generally what the human brain does. Is this, what is this person going to think about me? Well, that person was a beginner at one time too. And that's why I go back to the public speaking piece, because the audience wants you to be successful. They don't want you to, you know, be fearful. They want to celebrate your success. They want to be a part of your journey. Don't look at them as, you know, you have to wow them. They're there to hear you already because they know you're an expert. That's why they showed up.
That's a great analogy, because it definitely shifts your mind. Is instead of, because fear causes us to look at things as adversarial a lot of times as well. You know, because if you're up public speaking, you're fearful and you're nervous. If you begin thinking people are against you, that's definitely working against you, what you're really trying to do. So you have to have a positive mindset. And they showed up, like you said, they showed up to see you. They showed up to hear what you have to say. So really embracing the moment.
You know, I love to go back to this quote, because I love this quote. And it's, I am the master of my fate and the captain of my soul. So really, don't let fear hold your life back. You have to master your fear. Right. And that's important. We all need to do that. But our resilience is much higher and stronger than we can imagine. We're just not tapping into that enough. And you have to be willing to put your resilience to work. And most of us will reel back out of a situation rather than move through it. So I think it was Winston Churchill who might have said, he said some very powerful things a couple of times, and the exact quote I can't remember off the top of my head, but I know that there's another one that relates to the situation where he says, if you find yourself in hell, keep driving through it or keep moving forward. You have to attack it. You have to keep pushing forward. I'm not saying just lunge your way through it, but be very strategic, be very focused, do the risk analysis, and plan and prepare yourself to do the very best you can, and just keep moving forward. And the first of all the things, right? Awareness of your fear is very critical, and I've shared a lot of the things that you know that we can do. But facing your fear is really the first step, and the more you begin to face your fears, it's kind of like a muscle. You begin to exercise it, and it grows stronger and stronger and stronger. And many of us have not strengthened that muscle in a very long time.
True. And because I was thinking when you were speaking, yeah, we have to definitely strengthen that muscle. And the only way we do it is by getting into the game and really fight the good fight of, you know, that positive mindset and embracing the facts and not being overcome by the negative. So your wife, she will someday have to possibly overcome a fear of getting back on ladders because she had a negative experience. You know, she's probably been on ladders times before and nothing happened, but now she may be faced to get
back. Yeah, she may have a fear of heights or something like that in the future. And, you know, I told her not to get on the ladder in the first place. So,
oh wow,
yeah, I was away from the house that day, and she called me, and I was like, I said, just wait for me. I was like, I'll be there, and you know, it's okay. You know, it was a very powerful moment for us, but because you know, I told her not to do something, she did it anyway. And then she got hurt, and I was like, well. So, but we laugh about it. I kind of told her, I was like, hey, look, you got to listen to me. So,
you got her attention.
I mean, you might not like what I have to say sometimes, but, you know, but it's funny. I love her to death. And, you know, it was a wonderful, wonderful experience that we've gone through so far. So I can't, other than the pain that she's been in, it's been interesting, but yeah, she has to overcome that. So, and here, you know, I know you've been asking about different ways to overcome those fears. And sometimes we just, you know, one of the ways is just pretend you're not afraid. The very first time that I entered a speaking contest for Toastmasters International, it was a impromptu, extemporaneous speaking contest, and I didn't know what was going to be asked, you know, so I was very fearful that they were going to ask me something I knew nothing about or I couldn't answer, and I wouldn't be able to speak for the 2 minutes of space that they gave me, and I was in the bathroom right before it was my turn to speak, and I was the very last speaker, so I had to wait almost half the day before I got to speak. And I just relied back on my training. I went in the bathroom. I looked myself in the mirror. I started telling myself that I could do this, that I was powerful enough. I had a strong voice. I started telling myself very positive things. And I stood in there and I did the Superman pose, you know, with my hands on my hips, you know, and, you know, I did all those different things, right? And I walked out. I walked into the room very, very confident at that moment. Got in there and they asked me a question and I hit a home run and I actually won that competition. So it just goes to tell you that this thing's, you know, when it sounds silly, like why would you do the Superman pose or why would you talk to yourself in the mirror, you know, or, but that's because those things, that training works. And when you're put in those situations to where you start to feel your armpit sweat and your hands get sweaty and you start to get nervous and your mind starts racing, rely back to your training. Go back to what was I told and how was I supposed to prepare for this? You know, in these situations where I become nervous, where I become fearful, because you have to recognize the physiology in your body. And the more self-aware and mindful you are about that, the more you can recognize that fear. You can point it out and say, you know what? You're not going to get me this time. and you can begin to implement your training. You know, another thing for me, you know, if people are afraid to get out there and do something inspirational, or you know, maybe they're going to do something for the very first time in front of people, and you know, and that can be very scary, or they're not sure about a particular interview or job or something else in their life. Maybe their company's asking them to do something for them and they've never done it before. One of the things that I love to do is I love to, right before I do something, I look back on courageous people over history that might have gone through something similar before and take inspiration out of them, because most of those people were nobody. And then they went out there and they hit a home run and they killed it. And that's when their life began to take off. And if they wouldn't have stepped out in fear, you know, stepped out on the edge and faced their fear, they wouldn't have been where they are today, or they wouldn't have achieved everything that they would have achieved if they wouldn't have done that.
Yeah, we, right over fear, just on the other side of the fear is everything that we really want. We just have to go over that mountain. And we go over that mountain by demolishing it within ourselves, because that's where everything is anyway, within us. And when we overcome that, and when we tell ourselves whatever we want to experience, because in fear, we're concentrated on the negative and we fill our minds and our hearts with that fear and we go in that direction. So we are literally deciding our fate within this fearful thing. So we decide to build that muscle up and go in the positive direction, what we want to experience, because whatever is most dominant in our minds and heart, as I said, we're going to always move.
Well, yeah, you touched on something there about dominance, and the important thing about dominance, right, is it usually be, it doesn't, dominance doesn't just happen right away. It happens because it's kind of repeated itself over and over and over, and it's become the dominant thing in our lives. It didn't start out as the dominant thing in our life. So another way of overcoming fear is that as soon as you recognize that you're fearful about something, just go out and do it. Get it over with. Don't wait. You know, there, I told you a couple stories where I had to wait and I didn't have a choice, and you'll find yourselves in those moments. But if you do have a choice and you can get out there and do something that, you know, you're fearful of doing, then go out and do it. You know, take all the necessary precautions or whatever it is that not everything's life threatening or risky. You know, for example, dating. Most people have a hard time walking up and asking them for their phone number or if they would like to go out or something like that. I know it's a little different here in the COVID world. We have Zoom dating now, but you know, you have to go out, step out and ask the person a question. People have a hard time at these conferences and other breakout rooms and things like that, meeting new people. If you have a fear, just overcome it and walk up to a person and just execute what you're fearful on. And you'll begin to overcome that fear instead of waiting and letting it penetrate your mind and set you back. And you continue to think about it. Just get it out of the way. Just go ahead and attack it right there in that moment.
True. Yeah, because, you know, instead of being fearful of rejection or the worst case scenario, just get it out of the way. And you'll find out usually in this instant state that we're talking about, in that example, people are more friendly than anything, because people, we can sense when someone is fearful or feeling anxious, usually at a deeper level, we can sense that. So nobody really wants somebody to be in that state. Of course, we have outliers. Some people, you know, they have different mindset of don't care about certain things. But by and large, people want to be encouraging when they see you possibly in a fearful state. Yeah. Yeah. So that's really good information. And you talked about the spiral, the shotgun, and the loop, putting things in perspective. Yeah. So Wow, this has been really good. So what is your one to grow on? What valuable piece of information would you like to leave our audience
with? Yeah, you know, we've been kind of talking about fear and different ways to overcome that. Look, you know, I would be remiss if I didn't say that there are some things that do require professional help with. And I mean, if you have a fear that is really having an adverse effect on you or your life, you know, don't be afraid to go see a therapist or hire a professional mindset coach or somebody else that, you know, can help you overcome that. Most coaches are well-versed in mindset, but there are some folks that are really focused on mindset, and that's all they do is focus on mindset. While my trade is much more leadership. But I just want you to know that, you know, if that's the case, then you need to go out and seek out that professional help, because there are some things, right, that we just need to get to the professionals and let them help guide us through that. Other things are a little bit simpler, like dating and meeting people at conferences and things like that. Now, the other thing I'll tell you is the one piece of value advice that I would leave you with is just breathe. Just breathe. Breath and oxygen is the life source, right? It is the life source. And so just breathe, relax. If you got to, try some meditative practices, pray, focus on your breathing, things of that nature. However you do that meditative practice, I would say just do that and just try to relax and calm your body. I know meditation has really taken an uptick here in this last year because a lot of people are relying on it. But if you have a daily prescription of meditation in your life, which is 10 minutes, and you just focus on your breathing, count to 10 breaths and start over and do that for 5 to 10 minutes, you should start to see the difference. And you can do this right when you begin to recognize and have that mindfulness and that self-awareness of fear is coming my way. You can kind of take the time out. And it's like you're putting yourself in a timeout like a little kid. You put yourself in timeout. Compose yourself and then move forward. And I guarantee you, you'll be much better off than you were before. That's my one to live by.
Thank you for listening to The New Mind Creator Podcast with your host, Maurice, The New Mind Creator. This podcast has been sponsored by Abundant Sports and True Serum. Head over to www.mauriceflournoy.com to receive more motivation and insight to help create your new mind.